Welcome to Next Gen Mentoring Forum. The Next Gen Mentoring Forum series is to empower, educate, illuminate individuals who are interested in the financial planning industry. At each forum, an expert will discuss a topic in the field of financial planning with the purpose of inspiring critical thoughts and discussion. In today's session, I will interview Bill Van Law III, CFP, on the topic of how should advisors leverage the continuum of business models. Let's go to the next page, please. Ivana, let's go to the next page. My name is Dr. Jali Jen. I am the Director of Financial Planning Program at California Lutheran University. I maintain an active financial planning practice specializing in succession program management at Value Growth Institute. I've authored 3 award-winning books, including the most recent peer-reviewed research book published by Pellgriff Macmillan entitled Enhancing Retirement Success Rates in the United States. Let's go to the next page. One page above. Let's go back to the previous page, please. The Next Gen Mentoring Forum is sponsored by California Lutheran University School of Management Financial Planning Program. We offer MBA in financial planning that helps financial advisors pursue a leadership position to grow their financial planning practice by deploying advanced financial planning, effective communication, client communication, financial counseling, streamline practice management, as well as leveraging FinTech. All right, let's go to the main show of today. Let's go to the next page. Bill Van Law is the, today we have Bill Van Law in our session. He is an experienced financial professional with a track record of success. Perhaps most importantly, Bill is known for his commitment and compassion as a leader in the business and the community. As a frequent speaker and industry thought leader, Bill has been quoted in numerous publications, including Wealth Management, Think Advisor, Investment News and Research, and on the Wall Street. He has spoken and led sessions at many of the top events in the wealth industry, including Barron's Top Independent Advisor Summit. I'm going to pronounce this incorrectly, but excuse me with that. Tiburon CEO Summit and Deal and Deal Makers Summit and Capital Council. He also leads sessions for wealth firms of all sizes, including strategic planning workshops, as well as keynote address for corporate events. Now, before I turn the floor over, that I wanted to mention that Bill actually has 15 years at Raymond James as an executive role, as well as 18 years in the Merrill Lynch. But before I jump to the today's topic, Bill, would you be able to share with us, how did you get into the industry?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Chen. So great to be with you all today. And congratulations on each of you choosing the financial planning career. You know, it provides such a wonderful opportunity to have impact on your clients, and also to enjoy just an interesting career as you interact with so many different people. You know, I ended up in this career as a result of a combination of factors when I was in college. My dad had changed careers and had gone into the financial planning career, and then a roommate of mine had pursued this business, and sort of interesting, he asked me to go on the interview with this financial planning firm, which I did. He ended up not pursuing it. I ended up getting hired and sort of fell into it, but just fell in love with it. When I graduated, I had worked at IBM during my final year of school in a co-op program. Thought I might stay in the technology arena, but as I explored both technology opportunities and opportunities in our industry, ended up having an opportunity with Merrill Lynch right out of college. And so decided to pursue that and have never looked back. It's been such a rewarding and an enjoyable career.
It's interesting that now it's never a straight line, isn't it? A lot of us, I know at least in my own experience, I was a career changer, obviously much later than your experience. I came into the industry in the corporate financial system side. So there's some technology that I could relate to in your experience. But once you enter the industry, obviously you fell in love with it and did really, really well. Would you share with us, how did you progress from the entry level all the way up to the executives? What does it take for you to make that success?
Oh, well, first of all, luck, always plays a role, but it's about hard work, and it's about being open to the possibilities. You know, when I first started in the business, I started as a junior member of the team of a senior financial advisor. Really enjoyed that, did that for several years. My primary role then was prospecting and helping bring in new client relationships to that senior advisor. And after a few years, decided to go out on my own. I have to say that was a scary period of time. I remember reading an article in one of the research publications at the time that talked about how challenging it must be for the 30-year-old give or take advisor to earn the trust and of the typical person with higher assets, of course, being a retiree. Well, at the time I was 25. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish I looked 30. But in any case, went out on my own as an advisor at 25 and just thoroughly enjoyed it. Was fortunate enough to have some great mentors who provided some advice and guidance, one of which was get your CFP. So started my CFP just a couple years later and earned the CFP designation. It's hard to believe it's been so many years ago, but earned the CFP designation in 1990. And so just thoroughly enjoyed that. My main focus was estate planning. And so built the business largely educating people about the importance of estate planning. So in fact, did estate planning seminars every month for a decade with a local attorney. Thoroughly enjoyed that, but then was introduced into the opportunity of mentoring new advisors and then ultimately running the training program for new advisors. Was really intrigued by that, and so decided to explore a career in leadership. And so had an opportunity to move to Gainesville, Florida, where I managed my first office. And I think this also, I'll backtrack for a moment, because when you go into leadership at Merrill Lynch, they have an assessment process. And so it's a rather arduous process, thorough process. It's a day and a half where they're monitoring virtually everything. It's interviews, simulation, role playing. And then they meet after you're done and vote. And in order for you to make it into that next level of leadership, you have to be in the top 40% in their mind of leaders within the firm with development over a 3-year period of time. Sounds sort of difficult, but as I looked at it in retrospect, I'm like, what a great process, because who would want to give up a successful practice to move across the country and fail as a manager? But it's also a great lesson in terms of overcoming obstacles, because there's three potential options: pass, fail, or deferred. I was deferred. And so after I was deferred, I was thinking, okay, great, at least I don't have to move. But as it happened, the development opportunity gave me was to run my first branch. So I moved to Gainesville to run that office. But it was also instructive in the importance of life has obstacles. And if you're not prepared to overcome them, you're not going to achieve the success you otherwise would. Interestingly, in the history of Merrill, the people that have been deferred actually enjoyed on average a higher level of success, which I thought fascinating, because those are the ones that didn't pass right off the gate. Further study, the conclusion was that we all have things to work on. If you were deferred, you knew the only way that you could go on is to work on these things so that you could ultimately pass and go on to a career in leadership. And apparently over time, that sort of approach and philosophy is one that they adopted and used over the course of their career, continuing to learn and grow, continuing to overcome obstacles And I think that's one of the reasons that they enjoyed success. But from a leadership standpoint, continued on, was district sales manager, and then ran a couple of complexes. When things changed at Merrill in terms of senior leadership, decided it wasn't where I wanted to spend the balance of my career, and then shifted over to Raymond James. But in terms of that decision, Dr. Chin, and your question about that, you know, a big part of what grabbed me there is I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed the time as a financial advisor. However, I was just intrigued by the challenge of really being able to influence people's lives from a leadership standpoint and just the variety of issues that you have to deal with in leadership. And so that's what sparked the, frankly, really challenging decision to give away my business and pursue the career in leadership. But I have to tell you, it's been such a wonderful experience. You know, some of the different things I've been able to do over the course of my career, certainly wouldn't trade it, but they're different. And I think that's a choice that people have to make as they're pursuing and looking at what they want to do, is try to find the best fit for what they are interested in, for their skill set, so they go down the path that they feel will be most rewarding and be open to change, much like you referenced where you changed in your career, mid-career. Be open to change if you decide that there's opportunities that are a better fit.
Wow, there's a lot of things that I, let me just unpack it, because I think that there are a lot of things that you mentioned. One key thing that you talk about is really just to be open-minded. And that's one key thing. Then the other thing is to be open-minded, not only for the opportunity, but willing to learn. And learning usually comes from challenges. But at the very beginning, you mentioned that as you started out in your career, you're noticing that you are very good at prospecting. And then I think that's one thing people really need to pay attention of, is that sometimes niche is not something you define, it's rather they find you. So in your case, you're naturally good at prospecting, and you have a mentor, and you've gone through the proper training of getting CFP. Those are all very important things. Then you work specialize in estate planning. Not only that, you have a center of influence relationship with the attorneys that you probably doing some either joint work with clients or joint marketing. Those are really fabulous skill sets that many of the advisors ought to consider to do. Additionally, you mentioned about that as you cross over into leadership position in the corporate world, even though you have been deferred in terms of the assessment. Now, assessment is only a way to assess someone in terms of a certain criteria. But I think your message there is never get discouraged about any kind of defer or fail status, because that tells us that we have room to grow. And in your situation, that you consider that is obstacle, and we all going to run into obstacle one way or the other in life. And you took that as a learning opportunity. You adapt and learn as much as you could, and ultimately open to change. And I think that's one key thing that anyone who is in any business, it doesn't have to be in financial planning, it could be change. Change is always constant, and be open-minded for that. That's really, really phenomenal in terms of helping people see that there's not a straight line from one point A to point B. Thank you so much for sharing with us with your experience and wisdom to help everyone be successful in this industry. Ivana, if we don't mind to go, yeah. So my question to you is, as we're looking into the business continuum as a topic today. And we know that in this industry, there are, you know, just three major types of business models. And there's really not a right type of business model for every practice. And I, too, work with so many advisor firms. It really has so many different factors. Not one business model is best or the other. Could you talk about why there is not really necessarily the right business model for you know, not one size fits all. Share with us, what do you mean by there is no right business model for everyone?
Sure, would be happy to. As Dr. Chin mentioned, I spent the last 15 years at Raymond James, and in that experience, I was in four of their business models, from independent employee, which is a business that I launched for them in 2004, to the traditional employee business where I ran the that business for the most part that was not in Florida, Texas, and Michigan. In fact, I joked at the time that one of the side benefits of that is I got more frequent flyer miles than the other three combined because they were located in those respective markets. Joke, but also true. And then ran business development for our independent broker dealer. And then when I retired, I was president of the RIA custodial business. And so, you know, having been the only senior executive that was in all of those businesses, I was asked frequently by advisors as they were looking at the firm, you know, which business model is right. And, you know, so I've thought a lot about this question over the years. And the conclusion that I've come to is that the right answer really depends upon the circumstances. It's also important to recognize that it'll change over time. And the right answer for you early in your career is often different than the right answer for you later in your career. And so just being thoughtful to that, also as Dr. Chin was referencing earlier, you know, being thoughtful to circumstances and flexible regarding the right opportunity for you. So it might be that the right opportunity earlier in your career relates more to the team that you might join, for example, than the firm that that team happens to be at, because having the mentors in that team, you know, could make that decision a better one for you at that point in your career. And so we'll dig more into this later on in today's session, but each of those different business models has different attributes that, as a result of that, have pros and cons. And those are things that should be considered as you're considering what the right model is for you.
And thank you for taking us through your experience in Raymond James. And I truly believe that remaining flexible and adaptable, and oftentimes I tell my clients, you really just have to have your antenna up all the time looking for that opportunity. Sometimes, well, for the younger folks, they may not know what antenna is, but when you see an opportunity, oftentimes we are so consumed with our own business, sometimes we miss that. So I think that I always encourage people to really stop for a moment and look for those opportunities. Sometimes they're right in front of you that you potentially don't see it. You mentioned mentors, and this is probably not the first time you mentioned it. I had an opportunity to spoke with someone who is also very successful in the business. She had mentioned to me that she actually counts how many mentors she has, as well as how many mentees that she continued to pass on to the industry. What do you say to someone who is either in the beginning of the industry or till the tail end of the industry? I myself also have mentors. My rule has always been mentors for me. And then I also mentor three active industry professional. What would you say that to folks that who either is looking for mentors or looking to mentor someone? Are there any specific recommendation that you would provide?
Yeah, no, it's a great, great question. And, you know, awesome that you're not only mentoring, but also being mentored and mentoring, because I do think giving back over time is extremely important as well. But, you know, mentors can be on one hand, both, you know, opportunistic, and on the other hand, something that you actively seek out. You know, I'm reminded of reading the book on Tesla and Elon Musk. And for any of you that know the story or read that book, you know that Elon and I think it was his brother actively sought out some of the most successful leaders across industry, across the country, cold called them, and then drove across the country to meet face to face. Here we are in COVID, which we were discussing actually before this. I'm sitting in a hotel room, so I was joking earlier, the flag's behind me. No, I'm not a member of Congress, but I'm in a meeting room at a hotel room in Palm Springs. But actively seeking mentors, I think, is something that is important. So really being thoughtful about folks that you might build a relationship with and just simply asking their advice. And so, you know, these could be people that are in your specific industry, which is important, but they could also just be broad leaders within your community, people who you respect, who can give you guidance as you progress over the course of your career. I also referenced opportunistically participating. So you just may have opportunities that come just as a result of interactions with organizations like the Financial Planning Association, for example, where if you're going to any of the local meetings, you just meet some of the more seasoned financial planners who can provide advice or guidance. But they also can be, I mentioned that doing the estate planning seminars, you know, part of the reason for doing this was really trying to be thoughtful about what the needs were out there. So at that point in time, estate planning, very significant need. My experience was that most clients really hadn't thought about it. And as I learned more about it through the course of my financial planning work, realized the taxes that would be paid needlessly if people didn't have a proper estate planning. So it was an opportunity to really help the client. And then separately, I also referenced how young I was starting in the business. The attorney I selected was one who had a fantastic relationship and reputation in the community. Top graduate from when I was in Florida, from University of Florida, and then did law school at Duke. He was top 10 in both. So, you know, extremely bright. Part of my goal there was associate with who I felt was the very best estate planning attorney in the community. And so by association, with a combination of having a CFP, being connected with the best estate planning attorney, you know, in our community, just raised my profile, you know, as a younger financial advisor. And so he then turned out to be a mentor of mine and still to this day, you know, a good friend, you know, here 30 years later. And so I would say opportunistically, being just aware of this, as you mentioned, Dr. Chen, keeping your antenna up to what those opportunities are, and then separately, proactively seeking out relationships that you feel could potentially have impact.
And I think that one of the things that the two things that being actively looking or just being affiliated with association like FPA. One of the interesting things, two things that you mentioned out of the mentorship, one is that not only you look for them, but you also take the opportunity to do what I call the co-branding. And I did that myself as well. I actively calling one of my mentors. Interesting thing about people is that when you ask, and if the chemistry is there, oftentimes people are very delighted to take on a challenge like this. The worst that they could say is, no, I don't move on to someone else, but it doesn't mean that they will never be available to you. So I think that having the courage to call someone that you respect in the industry, you just may be surprised. So I did that before. In the co-branding portion of it, in your situation, you have a very reputable estate attorney working with you that you kind of just co-brand out of him. But or being successful. So I think that those are all the techniques oftentimes people don't necessarily think about. They just thought, I'm just going to go to meet a mentor, but then do not think beyond that relationship. There are so many things, beautiful things. So thank you so much for giving us those insights. Ivana, let's go to the next question, please. One of the things that I oftentimes see company, not necessarily in financial board, that the ability, and this is the key word that we've been talking about again and again, being flexible and being adaptable. And here is about technology, right? Technology innovation plays a key role, not necessarily in financial planning practice. I could argue that probably any industry out there, how fast you can adapt and how fast you can innovate plays a key role of the future growth of the company. So share with us, what do you think about how does the technology and innovation actually help or not help the financial planning practice?
Yeah, really great question. You know, and as I was reflecting on this, I was just thinking about, you know, how technology impacts our lives, you know, in so many ways, you know, from the cell phone, which we think about how dependent we are, but how flexible this allows us to be. So with Dr. Chen and I both operating from different hotels on this live webinar is just a wonderful example of that. But I was just thinking about so many other aspects of our lives. Who would have thought, you know, 20 years ago that automobiles would be impacted by a global chip shortage? You think, you know, maybe it would have been some other part, but not a computer chip that would impact that. And I was thinking about something as simple as bicycle, with cycling as one of my passions. I just bought a new bike a couple of months ago. It's all electronic shifting. There's no wires, you know, it's pretty remarkable. But when we think about our industry and the role that the technology has played, it really has profound impact. It has impact on the relationship with a client, the ability to connect with a client in the way the client wants to you to connect with them, in the time and the place. It also has impacted this shift in business models. As we look at this shift to more independent business models, which has been an increasingly important and prolific trend in our industry, it's been hugely impacted by technology. You know, it used to be that in order to have technology and access to resources, you needed to be at one of the big firms. You know, that isn't the case anymore. In fact, you know, some might say that instead, the smaller firms, because of their ability to pivot and adopt new technology more quickly, that those firms actually enjoy a competitive advantage versus the bigger firms. You know, when I was at Raymond James, I sat on the technology prioritization committee. And so that group looked at technology as we were making changes and enhancements to our platform for advisors. Well, one of the challenges we had, even being a bigger firm, was that, you know, you still have limited resources. And if you're spending money on the CRM today, for example, you're not spending it, you know, this year on the financial planning package. And so you tend to sort of leapfrog where you adopt the latest version of a particular tool or resource. And then as you're doing that, maybe another firm is adopting the latest version of a different piece of technology. As an independent firm, you're able to pivot more quickly. And so some might even argue today that there's more freedom and flexibility in terms of technology innovation in those arenas. And when we look at fintech and the impact that fintech has had, both in terms of the opportunities for that sector, but also how they've empowered independent financial advisors and independent firms, it's really been fascinating to watch. But I certainly expect these trends to continue. I think the really great news for those that are paying attention and are aware and adopting this technology is it really enhances your ability to have impact on your clients, connect with clients, and deliver financial solutions for your clients.
And I, as you use the car and